Hi, my name is Jamie, and this is Mel, the extra 40 minutes to my otherwise unsatisfying ending of this movie.
And this is Boo Crime Fucking Podcast.
Whee!
There's no pause button, Jamie.
Oh, okay. So I keep talking?
Yeah.
I'll edit that. That's fine. We only have 2 hours. Okay. Hey, Mel.
Hey, Jamie.
What's new and exciting?
Not a whole lot over here, but I heard that you got a very, very spatial delivery.
Oh, my God. I got an increase on my credit card.
Big mistake.
And I've been like recklessly spending, but also like just shoving back in like $200 like every week or every when I just remember it. So it's like I have no idea what it's at right now, but I do know that today I got the cutest little like cottage core mushroom purse, number one.
Cute.
Really cute. I'll send you a picture. And then
we'll post it on the Instagram.
Do you guys care? Yeah, it's from Etsy. I'll link the person. But yeah, and then so whenever I was on my vacation, I didn't go into too many details about that, but they're like I'm not going to because we only have 2 hours to record this.
Thanks, don't worry, we'll get to that.
But yeah, so during my vacation, I almost got like ripped off like hardcore, like $500 and I didn't. So to celebrate, I bought myself a $100 like 3 centimeters by 3 centimeters space rock.
What's its name? Can you tell the listeners a little bit about this rock? Because I won't go within, I don't know, like a whole city center.
Oh, yeah.
Close to it. Forget it.
So you're never coming to my house again.
You're gonna have to bury it in the backyard.
Yeah. So I purchased a chunk of moldavite, and moldavite is a green rock crystal, if I guess you could say, but it comes from space. Like literally, you can only get it in the Czech Republic where a meteor came down and hit, and that's where it is. So
Have to mine for it. I Googled it. I had so many questions.
They have to mine for it, but also the thing is like you have to make sure you're buying from like a reputable buyer, seller, I mean, because obviously it's not very like accessible. And so there's
people
only
are
so much
out there
out
selling
there.
Green glass. I saw people are literally, they're like all of these different ways to tell if it's real or not. I'm like, good thing to know. Like I need to know so I know what to stay away from and keep myself safe.
Yeah. So moldavite is best known as like the fuck around and find out stone, I guess. It's literally some people feel physically nauseous even being around it, and that sounds terrible, but and it just fucks up your whole life. And it's like, why would you want that, Jamie? Well, moldavite fucks up your life, but in that like, you know, the universe has your back kind of way, where you just like fall into it and let it happen and embrace it, which is what I've been trying to do. Like literally so much shit has fucked up. Even when it was in the mailbox, things were fucking up.
You left it in there. You left it in there for days and I think it got mad.
No, it was nicely packaged, very nicely packaged. It had some other free crystal rocks and stuff alongside. So we had buddies. So he was fine, I wasn't ready yet. I was ready, but like I wanted to give it like, you know, a moment, but like I was so busy. Anyway, so I have it now, and since having it, it's broke my TV, like my internet, my electricity, like my plugs, just like a lot of things.
It's a satellite into space, and it's sending all of your shit out there to the aliens whose spaceship crashed in the Czech Republic.
Yeah. So I didn't finish what I was saying because I rambled on to something else. But yeah, so it fucks up your life, but like to lead you on your path. So basically, you know, we I guess the best way I could describe it is we have a lot of things that we have goals for and want to do, but we let our like stupid beliefs get in our way, and procrastination and like money issues and just everything. So we don't actually ever really truly go for something. So this kind of pushes you in the right direction, any means necessary. So things might be really fucked up, like you break up with someone, your car breaks down, you know, you lose your job, but then like you actually find like your soulmate and you get like the best job that you've been dreaming about, and your grandma dies and leaves you her Ferrari. Like
just like, you know, trades.
Rest in peace, grandma.
You're just doing some trading in there. You trade in the old Ferrari for the new Ferrari, grandma.
Yeah, so I'm pretty excited about it. And you know what? Since getting The Rock, I swear a lot of shit on my Instagram have started like turning over. So a lot of we're not going to go into politics too much, but just a lot of the politics that we follow and a lot of the craziness that we're watching over in America happen. There's like a lot of accountability and like people like finally being punished for their evil capitalist.
Send them some Moldavite into the mail. Put some of that, just chip off some of that Moldavite and send it like some anthrax. That's just please don't come for us.
I'm gonna make a dildo out of Moldavite and shove it up all their asses.
Okay.
How about that?
Yeah, that's the next step. I was gonna say just send it like some anthrax or like, you know, a casual pipe bomb. No, these are jokes. CSIS, CIA, FBI, please don't come for us. This is a comedy podcast. But it might not be a comedy podcast for long, because all of our hosting utilities and sites that we do love them and use have recently gone over to a subscription-based model, like most things in life, where how dare you have it for not money. So we don't like to ask anybody for anything, but if, you know, we know in this economy times are tough for everybody, but if you happen to see, you know, a couple loose quarters on your dresser, a couple bucks a loonie in your pocket, we are going to drop our Buy Us a Coffee link, buymeacoffee.com link in our description. And if you have a shilling for your gals, we won't be restricted to 4 hours of content a month. It'd be very helpful. And we don't have ads. Nobody sponsors us. It's just us, just two idiots doing their darndest.
If anything, we do free promo all the time.
You know, if you want to shout out, if you buy us a coffee, we will shout you out. I'll write you a poem. But yeah, you know, we'll
call your mom and sing her happy birthday.
I'll draw her a picture.
But yeah, like Mel was saying, our hosting, like we're with Spotify for podcasters now. So luckily that as of right now is still free, but it's the online like recording software that allows us to record while having a life and, you know, living an hour away from each other. So we really could use some help. And if you don't have any money to give, we totally understand because we're also poor. But if you could even like, review, share with your friends, maybe
they have
give us a little bit of, give a little boost in our algorithm, get us a couple more listeners. You know, we could keep that momentum going. You know, maybe eventually we'll even be able to afford to make more episodes more often.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you so much. If you're considering even if it's a thought in your mind, thank you already.
Thank you. So that's our 15 minutes of talking. Okay, we have to record now because we only have 2 hours for free. Let's do this.
All right. I'm going to do a quick rundown of our last episode, because if you haven't realized by now, this is Nightbreed Part 2. We did the extended director's cut, which was quite long, and then we talk a lot. So if you haven't listened to last episode, you can go ahead and hit back and listen to it right now, or you can listen to me do a little synopsis and then just go from here. Whatever the fuck you want to do, nobody will make you do anything. But last time on Boo Crime Podcast, we meet a leather jacket clad bad boy named Boone, who suffers from horrific nightmares full of monsters. He has a supportive girlfriend named Lori and also a really sketchy therapist named Dr. Decker, who tried to drug him and get him to confess to some heinous murders that are happening in the area. After convincing the cops that he's a murderer, the therapist gets him killed. But surprise, we find out that it's the doctor himself doing these crimes. Oh, also another twist, Boone's not dead. He comes back as one of the monsters he's been dreaming of, and he's inducted into the secret world happening under a cemetery called Midian. We ended the episode with the therapist killing a local gas station attendant that he tortured into giving him the location of the cemetery, and girlfriend Lori, who's looking for answers about her boyfriend's death, is currently over there meeting the creatures of the night.
Good. Wow, that was beautiful.
Yay.
Good job. Okay.
I wrote it down.
Let's jump back into it, everybody. And yes. Just before we do, if you're like, what's going on and you didn't watch episode one or listen to episode one, go back and listen to it. Or if you're cool with Mel's little recap, that works too. Maybe you just like hearing our voices and you don't really care about the movie. So anyways, if you do care about the movie, listen to the first episode. All right. So as Mel had mentioned, Lori is in Midian and she has just met a couple of the creatures that live below and she is looking for Boone. So she does not listen to them. And when they like leave her and go back down, so she follows her way. So Lori is making her way down further into the depths of Midian. She comes across the priest / our boy Doug, who tells her that Boone is with Baphomet getting baptized and that it is forbidden for her to go down. But Lori has all the bad bitch energy now, so she tells him she's finding her Boone and she doesn't think he will stop her. And he does not. Now, before I go any further, as we are bringing up Baphomet again, and we spoke just briefly on him last episode, so I'm sure you guys have heard the name Baphomet. So I did a little history on Baphomet because I was remembering recently, I was just like learning about the Church of Satan because I just like to dig into those types of things because I really respect them. They're always coming out for like helping out people who are being bullied for their gender, sexual identity, for being black, for being brown. Like they're always just standing up for equality. And they use Baphomet as their mascot deity. But anyways, Baphomet is often like associated with the Church of Satan, but like they're really kind of more doing it in the kind of way like, because like the Church of Satan has nothing really to do with Satan. Any like, you know, they're not actually worshiping Satan. It's more the anti-religion.
Yeah, basically. I just wanted to do a quick shout out of when the Church of Satan held a like lesbian porno on the grave of Fred Phelps, who was part of the Westboro Baptist Church trying to deny gay that. Rights. He was just a real fucking piece of racist, homophobic shit. And they banged on that fucker's grave. And I'm here for that.
I love that so much. And I love the Church of Satan. Like, cheers to you guys. And you often see Baphomet as well associated with witchcraft. You can see him kind of doing the as above, so below, but he's not necessarily a he. He's a they. The statue itself, there are breasts. Mm-hmm. There's all of the anatomy of a male and a female mixed together to represent, and a goat. And a goat head to represent the divine feminine and the masculine. But that's not what I want to talk to you guys about really quickly. I want to talk about our moment in the movie where we learned the history of what happened to the Nightbreeds. And we see in that reenactment an absolute crusade of what I am assuming now that I remembered are Knights Templar. And that like clicked something from when I was researching the Church of Satan, because I was like, where did Baphomet come from? Like, what are Baphomet's origins? So I'm just going to read this really quickly and just kind of give you a brief description of who Baphomet is and just a little mini history lesson of just what's relevant. Okay, so Baphomet is a deity allegedly worshipped by the Knights Templar. Now, the Knights Templar were the poor fellow soldiers of Christ and of the Temple of Solomon, also known as the Order of Solomon's Temple, the Knights Templar, or simply the Templars. And it was a Catholic military order, one of the wealthiest and most popular military orders in Western Christianity. So these are the guys, they're the bad guys that you see in the movies going to just kill all the pagans all the time. Like they're, I don't know if anybody watched that, The Lady in the Water or whatever. It was like a Arthurian kind of story, like how Arthur got the sword and everything. But
oh, I remember that in the actual book, like of this like Sword in the Stone story, like King Arthur's tales, Knights of Camelot.
Yes, and exactly. Yeah. So like in the, it's on Netflix. I think it's like The Woman in the Lake or The Lady in the Water. It's not the one that's by M. Night Shyamalan. It's the other one. But it's a series that was out, and the main character, female character, she's like of Fae, and there's different Fae like species and stuff. And the Knights Templar basically are like running around just killing, like genocide. So, and I loved that kind of idea in the film that there used to be all these magical, like, you know, people like Fae, like things that we only dream about or hear in lore. And maybe they were real. Maybe they were here because fucking Christianity was just like, we need to just like 1984 this shit, burn all the books, burn all the, like, you know, history.
Yeah.
So anyways, Baphomet is a deity allegedly worshipped by the Knights Templar that subsequently became incorporated into various occult and Western esoteric traditions. The name Baphomet appeared in trial transcripts for the Inquisition of the Knights Templar starting in 1307. It first came into popular English usage in the 19th century during debate and speculation on the reason for the suppression of the Templar order. Baphomet is a symbol of balance in various occult and mystical traditions, the origin in which some occultists have attempted to link with the Gnostics and the Templars. Although occasionally purported to be a deity or a demon, since 1856 the name Baphomet has been associated with the Sabbatic goat. Image drawn by Eliphas Levay, composed of binary elements representing the symbolization of the equilibrium of opposites, half human, half animal, male, female, good, evil, etc. Levay's intention was to symbolize his concept of balance, with Baphomet representing the goal of perfect social order.
Damn.
We love it.
That's crazy.
So we're going to just do a quick little history lesson, just because we have so much time. The name Baphomet appeared in July 1098 in a letter about the siege of Antioch by the French crusader Anselm of Ribonnot. So this is a little letter he wrote. As the next day dawned, they, who are the inhabitants of Antioch, called loudly upon Baphomet, and we prayed silently in our hearts to God. Then we attacked and forced all of them outside the city walls. Raymond of Agiers, who's just some like writer of the First Crusade, reports that the troubadours used the term Baphomet for Muhammad and Buffameria for a mosque. The name Baphomets later appeared around 1195 in the provincial poem Senhors per los nostres peccats by the troubadour Govardin. Around 1250, a provincial poem by so-and-so, who you don't care about, bewailing the defeat of the Seventh Crusade, again used the name Baphomet for Muhammad. De Baphomet is also the title of one of four surviving chapters of an Occitan translation of Ramon Lull's earliest known work, The Libre de la Doctrine Peril. So this is where we get to our Knights Templar. Baphomet was allegedly worshipped as a deity by the medieval order of the Knights Templar. King Philip IV of France had many French Templars simultaneously arrested and then tortured into confession in October 1307. The name Baphomet appeared in trial transcripts for the Inquisition of the Knights Templar that same year. Over 100 different charges had been leveled against the Templars, including heresy, homosexual relations, spitting and urinating on the cross, and sodomy.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, most of them were dubious, as they were the same charges that were leveled against the Cathars and many of King Philip's enemies. he had early kidnapped Pope Boniface VIII and charged him with nearly identical offenses, yet Malcolm Barber observes that historians find it difficult to accept that an affair of such enormity rests upon total fabrication. The Chenon parchment suggests that the Templars did indeed spit on the cross, says Sean Martin, whoever he is, and that these acts were intended to simulate the kind of humiliation and torture that a crusader might be subjected to if captured by the Saracens, where they were taught how to commit apostasy with the mind only and not with the heart. Similarly, Michael Haag suggests that the simulated worship of Baphomet did indeed form part of the Templars' initiation rite. So anyways, that's a whole lot of shit to say. From what I had read upon, it's just like a way, again, to just like hate like Islam.
Oh my God. Like,
seriously, like, yeah. Basically, like, you know, they're
trying to be like any Muhammad. Any religion that isn't like white Christianity and Catholicism is the devil, it's Baphomet, it's the goat, it's Satan, it's this. It's like, you can almost see where all of that kind of, you know, that all comes together. Anybody who's against, like, the church is the
Jewish propaganda. Yes. You know, Jewish propaganda, they have their own like deities that are demons and stuff. And like, you know, that's why we need to hate them. And, you know, Islam, this is the same thing. And what I think they're getting at is like the Knights Templar were like infiltrated while they were fighting against, you know, Islam. And so King Philip, who just sounded like he was just like a really paranoid fucking control freak, was like, you know what? We need to torture these fuckers until they tell us that they're worshiping Muhammad and hate Christianity or whatever.
Yeah.
And maybe that was his way of being like, well, thank you guys for killing everybody for me.
But now you're all witches and it's time to burn.
And there's actual images on this page of the Knights Templar being burned at the stake in the 15th century French manuscript. So there you anyways, go, man. That's how they get rid of their dirty work.
Yep. Burn it to ash.
Now, all you historians out there listening to this are probably like, what the fuck, Jamie? You butchered that. But you know what?
I tried.
That's okay. This is a horror film podcast.
with heavy accents of comedy and very less amount of accents on history.
Yeah. And I mean, this Wikipedia page for Baphomet is like 500 pages long. So going to take what I can and I'm going to figure it out.
I love it.
Yeah. So anyways, that's it. Back to the movie. Our sweet, sweet, innocent, lovable dog boy follows behind Lori, low-key winking at the priest like, yo, I got her, bro.
Aw, support.
So, yes, Lori has entered the catacombs. And for this, I made a bullet list of all the weird shit she sees. And I'm going to attempt to give you the best description of each weird-ass thing as I see it. So there's no structure in this.
This montage is crazy. It's craziness. So I can't wait for this bullet list to just melt my mind, because the scene melted my mind.
Okay, everybody drop your microdoses or macrodoses now. So again, bullet point. Alien dinosaur eating furball. Saber-tooth tribal man drumming. A bust of Sigmund Freud or Colonel Sanders. Obese, no arms, only hands, big tits, saggy neck, head hanging down to belly, looks like Krang from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Their underground city, which is all staircases and ropes, bridges everywhere, low-key wondering if the Nightbreed are also the little monsters, which I mentioned before. Because I swear, this is where Howie Mandel brings Fred Savage under the bed in said movie. And next we have that creepy Vecna looking dude with the rib bones for a neck that we saw during the hand ceremony. A parrot, a blue face, Dracula's brides / Hecate, no-eyed blue veiny mole man, his mom ? Also no eyes, but on purpose. A leopard.
Also no eyes.
A leopard with tits riding the dinosaur version of a hippopotamus, and I'm calling it Slaymation. Also, stingray flies by. two Klingons washing another one of those obese belly heads with a rag and a bucket of water. She turns the corner. Klingon runs up into her face, looks more like Man Bear Pig now.
Oh my God.
Oversurprised guy, which makes me think of the literal version of Total Eclipse of the Heart. Oversurprised guy. he too is super fat. They are eating well down here. Chained, makes deep growl, yells, bad teeth, drool. Eels.
Eels.
Ghost Boon? Question mark. Uncle Bad Touch makes a feeble attempt to grab her and leaves us with this audio. There goes the neighborhood. Woman who should always wear a mask. Great potential partner for our silly scalp friend.
Mm-hmm.
Scorpions, literal living pile of flesh, basket cases, dad, chud. Somebody in the back is eating someone else. No judgment here, I guess. Papa Legba doing a tarot reading. Backside of Boone with bad hair. Marinara. Literally not Boone. A bad Dr. Moreau anamorphic. Is Marinara hot, question mark, with his pirate shirt, cigarette, and cocky attitude, or is that my toxic taste in men?
Oh my God, as if you slipped that in there during that montage. You're just like, is he kind of cute, that one?
Is it me? Am I the drama? I don't think I'm the drama. Maybe I am. Am I the villain? I don't think I'm the villain.
All right, once again.
Incredible, Jamie. Really, really 10 out of 10.
Thank you, thank you.
I think that should make a very clear depiction of what that was. It was like flash. It was like high energy turning corners, monsters, monsters, monsters. And it just was weird. So much weird.
Yeah, it was like chaos. And like I said, it was like Slaymation is what I'm calling it. Because you know what it reminded me of, Mel?
What?
You remember those, I remember my brother always had them. I think my cousins had them. And it's not like heavy metal, like, you know, the brand, like heavy metal, like the movies and stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But it's something like similar to it. But like, I remember like back in the early 90s, a lot of guys would have posters and they were just like really dark and scary and would have like, yeah, like random like creatures, but then like always like a hot babe, I guess, maybe like heavy metal, you know,
yeah.
Like a hot naked girl, like fighting a demon.
Anyways, and she always had a sword and like a headdress and stuff on, like of like beads and like her 80s metal hair. And then she's fighting some sort of like six-headed lion snake.
Yeah. And like in the background, there's just like flesh and blood and wars going on. Like that's just kind of what it reminded me of. But like also kind of fun. Like it's just there was such a diverse amount of people. Like some people I was like, I'd be friends with that one. And then I'd be like, these guys are just really fucking freaky. Like, how do you have a conversation? Like, what are their conversations like down there?
Especially when the one's mouth is like connected to its stomach. You're just like looking down to read its lips as it gargles at you.
Yeah, that guy with the fucking head in his stomach is scary.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Okay, let's continue. So we are back with the doc and detective and the military, and they're talking business. And once again, this psychiatrist is way too involved in this investigation. Decker informs the detectives that he has found Boone alive, which the detective finds super hard to believe considering they literally put 5,000 bullets inside of him.
They did.
He tells him he has killed again up in Midian. Like, bro, how do you know? Go home, stop messing with the investigation. Don't you have other patients or a child to brutally murder? Like, I tell ya.
Seriously.
The police chief of the backwoods town they're in is now telling us tale as old as time. This is my jurisdiction, detective says. He's my prisoner. Decker's like, but he's my patient. And then they all pull their dicks out, measure them, and start pissing everywhere. Mm-hmm, the end. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Decker that's pretty much how that went. That's how that went.
Yeah. Decker explains that Boone is no longer alone. He's part of a gang now. A gang from Midian. The police chief seems to know the lore, but thinks it's bullshit. But Decker insists they live under the cemetery and there will be more bloodshed if they don't stop them now.
I'd be like, how do you know this? Like, were you on site? Maybe you should be arrested, idiot.
Why is it that police officers don't believe a woman when they say that they've been raped, but they're like, let's go check it out. Let's go check it out, I guess.
This guy's like, I saw monsters, and there's like a whole crew of serial killing monsters who live under the earth. And they're like, yeah, that sounds good to me. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Let's go do that.
And then they walk by the girl and they're like, well, I mean, you were asking for a dress like that.
You slut.
You stupid slut. All right. So we're back at Midian again. And Lori walks in on Reverse Peel Face. Nice. Who is having a special moment with a lady friend, a.k.a. a corpse.
Hey, you're very light on your feet. You may not be gorgeous, but you'll do for me.
Lori goes to continue past him and he stops her and tells her,
hey, you can't go down there.
Why not?
Isn't this a great place? Shangri-La on Zope. We love it.
What's that smell?
Not me. The berserkers are down there. Mad bastards. They'll rip off your head and shit down your neck.
Did Boone go down there?
And he won't be coming back.
But Lori doesn't listen. Sweet, sweet dog boy walks by Onlyface, who tells him he likes his tattoo as he lightly caresses his chest with a finger. Dog boy blushes and runs past, to which Onlyface lovingly says, sailors? Is that what he says? What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Oh, no. Serving. He says sailors, like eye roll, you know? And he's referring to the boy. And, like, he's being a sassy girl. I don't know. So Lori wanders down a creepy corridor, even more creepy, I guess, than what I already explained, and is suddenly grabbed by a baby rancor. Dog boy distracts him, and Lori is freed. And she asks, where's Boone again? Completely dedicated, no matter how literally brain-frying this place is.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievably, Lori reaches Boone down in Baphomet's lair. They embrace, and as they do so, Lori gets a good look at our Lord and Savior Baphomet, who is serving me xenomorph clone queen realness.
Yes.
We will post a photo of the side-by-side of the xenomorph mother clone from that one, I think it was Covenant, Alien Covenant, when it has Ripley's DNA and like the baby's like half human, half xenomorph. And in my mind, I always imagine it at the end getting sucked through that tiny hole into space, yelling, Mama, no! I don't think he says that. But anyways, continuing.
You wanted him to. So, you know, it's as good as done.
Yeah. So Boone and Lori are making their way out of the chamber and through the underbelly of Midian with our dog boyfriend. Boone gets heckled by Marinara as he runs past with Lori. They make it to the exit, where the sun is shining, so Dog Boy retreats and closes the doors behind him. Boone is suddenly mad and wants to go back in. Like, why did you even leave, bro? I'm confused. But he tells Lori, this is where he belongs. And Lori, who I might say is acting a bit selfish, tells him he belongs with her. Belong to the earth. Okay. Maybe you two are meant to be, Lori, but girl, they already killed him once and now he can't die. So are you just going to let him continue to get shot at a million times, rot away in prison for centuries? Although after the tour, I'm thinking the conditions might be a bit better in jail.
Yeah, she's just like, I love you, but I'm not staying here.
Yeah, like I would rather you live like both of us in a jail cell than down here with these freaks. That's not me saying it, it's Lori.
Yeah, it's Lori.
Boone gives in. And this is where I realize everyone is just telling Boone what to do. Like the guy doesn't have any critical thinking skills whatsoever. His will against peer pressure is weak as fuck. Like Boone is so dumb. He's just taking pills from his doctor, you know, getting hit by trucks, getting shot at. I want to go and I love Lori. No, I belong with them down here. Like,
all that hair gel rotted his brain, dude. Like, you know, he can't make any decisions when he's using Aquanet and it's just bleaching his brain.
He has that like Neanderthal style skull. So for sure, I see it. All right. So now we're going to take you to a new place. And we are going to meet a woman that I am calling Jenny because she looks like a Jenny. So that's what I'm calling her. I was also going to call her Peggy as a close second, but felt that was more American. So Jenny is on the phone.
I have so many thoughts and words about this fucking person.
Yeah. So I should also mention, too, like, Jenny, where she's working, is at, like, a hotel. And I realized later on in the movie, this is the same hotel that had that, like, bar attached to it.
Shut up.
Yeah, because later they're like, we have to go back to my room and get my stuff, remember? Probably not. But
oh, my God.
I'm like, I can barely remember. It's been so long. But yeah, so this is actually the hotel where Lori was staying. So Jenny, again, is on the phone talking shit about Arnie to somebody who I'm assuming is her coworker or boss.
Mm-hmm.
She's also yelling right into the ear Arnie's name. And it turns out someone hasn't checked out yet. So she's going to have to find someone, aka Arnie, to go out there and check. The thing is, I was not really paying attention to anything she was saying because I was too busy focusing on her not only chatting on the phone, but holding what can only be described as a giant tender flaky. So she's holding a giant tender flaky as well as smoking a cigarette as well as being on the phone.
Multitasking. Garbage.
Yeah, you go, Jenny. So she hangs up the phone, smashes her cigarette into the ashtray, which you then see literally bounce out of the ashtray, still lit, onto the desk. Jenny doesn't notice. Yes.
Doesn't give a shit.
She takes a huge bite out of the delicious-looking tender flaky and legit drops 75% of it, and I am offended.
Throws me out.
Do you hear that? That is the sound of Jenny eating the floor cake while saying she is grossed out and licking her dirty roadside hotel office floor fingers.
I can't. She is so fucking irritating to me. Piling up her disgusting floor dessert on her desk. She's a goddamn fucking pig. She's
licking her fingers in between each touch to the floor.
COVID didn't exist back then.
Gross. Licking her finger. Like,
she's a fucking animal, okay? She's an animal.
We don't like Jenny. So while Jenny is down, while she's down on the floor for what seems like forever, she says a pair of feet approaching and we get the first interaction between these two.
I want a murderer down here! Now, because I'm sick of listening to your dog shit!
Listen, you fuzzy little shithead!
I've been fucked around in my time by a fairly good cross-section of mean-tempered, rule-crazy cops. And now, it's my turn. So fuck you, officer. I'm in charge.
Just kidding. She sees a head. It's Arnie's severed head.
Nice.
Sitting right next to her floor cake. Our good friend Shia LaBeouf, wearing a grocery bag, chopped his head off and is now it's Jenny's turn.
I'm glad it's her fucking turn. Honestly, I'm sorry, Jenny. I hate you.
And now it's Jenny's turn. So, yeah, Jenny's going to get it.
I'm glad.
Boone and Lori get back to Lori's hotel to grab her things. And Boone immediately senses something is off, asking Lori why it's so empty in there. And announcing that he can smell blood. There is a moment of silence as Lori comes to terms with her boyfriend's new unsettling gift. And then something clicks and she quickly pushes her room door open, expecting to find another bathroom bestie pinned to the wall like some cheap Christmas calendar of your cousin's ugly kids.
Oh, damn, girl. You went in on that. Come on.
But no, her room remains undisturbed. But Boone's spider senses, or should I say actual human cannibal senses, again, Shia LaBeouf, are still a-tingling. As he makes his way to the room next door, Lori discovers a hole in her wall, and it's not a glory hole. As she walks up to the hole, Boone enters the adjoining room, and they are both met with a gruesome sight.
Sounds like a glory hole to me.
Yeah. You know that video with Jack Black and Dave Grohl? And they get all, like, kinky, like, they're hillbillies. And they, like, show up at the hotel. It's a Foo Fighters song. So this is exactly like that, but plus a butcher shop, and they had a baby. And that's
nice. The crossover that we love.
Yeah, the crossover that we never knew we needed. So Lori runs over next door to find Boone, and I was half expecting him to be eating everyone, but he keeps himself in check. Good boy, Boone. Nobody told him he can eat them yet, so he's
waiting. That's true. He's waiting.
They know this is Decker's work, but why? Why would he kill a bunch of random dudes next door?
It's a trap!
The SWAT team has arrived, and at the worst possible time, Boone is going all evil angel, bringing that Buffy background. Doesn't want Lori to be near him. The blood is definitely making him a little loco.
And what's wrong? What is it?
I don't want you to see. Get out!
Boone, I'm not gonna leave you.
Lori backs away and runs down the hallway, and Boone slams the door shut and finally gives in to temptation. He dips 3 fingers into Bobby Jeffs Jr. blood and deep throats that bitch. Like, the way he literally took those fingers and put in the back of his tongue, I've only ever seen that move in porno.
Yeah. And he's doing it to suck on some random hillbilly blood.
I know. Lori is now getting into her car and leaving. So much for loyalty. When we are done recording, I'm totally going to ask Sexton his... I love that my computer wrote Sexton. If he would still love me if I morphed into a swirly face demon and drank random people's blood, because I need to know if I'm wasting my time here in this relationship.
My dude, compared to some of the other demons that I know, we said it before, like the guy whose head is literally on his stomach, he's not that bad and he can relax. Okay.
Yeah, definitely. Bunny, why are you always snoring when I record? Okay. Well, guys, Boone gets arrested. Like, he literally just hides in a closet, like cowers up into a little ball. And just like in every crime movie, he is caught literally red-handed, like covered in everybody's blood, even though he's innocent of murder, but definitely throwing out a charge of desecrating the body because he did that shit.
Yeah, all he right, sucked now. Its blood a little bit. He sucked the blood a little bit, okay?
Take her away, bitch.
I'm taking her away. So our main sergeant guy of the hillbilly town, who I'm just calling Dennis Rader because that's all of the vibes I'm getting from him. He decides he's going to take the law into his own hands, and he wants to beat the shit out of Boone. He calls him a cannibal freak. He says that he's come to the wrong town, and it's just some real cowboy shit all up in here. So while they're at the jail cell next door, we get a little shot of a priest who's listening to this beating happen, and at the same time he's like cutting himself randomly while reading the Bible. I don't know what this town is about, but yeah, real normal shit's happening. So
he's giving me the Langoliers that I made you watch.
Yes,
it's giving me Shredding Paper, dude.
He's just trying to keep himself calm with all of the violence going on around him by just slicing himself up into little shreds.
He's digging his nails into his own palm. Yeah. That's what he's doing. Yeah.
He's like the guy in he's self-flagellating, like the guy in Da Vinci Code. It's all for Jesus or something. So back in the office, Sergeant BTK gets a phone call while the psych is standing oh so close to a giant portrait that the cop has of himself on the wall. And our psychiatrist, therapist, anyways, he's just staring at it. If he was any closer, he'd be inside of this painting. Like, it's just so close. But anyways, Detective Joyce, which we met earlier, the first half of the movie, he rushes in and he suspects that this could be a cult situation, or at least more to it than just Boone. And the sergeant, who's been douchily smoking a cigar since the jail cell assault that I just went over a little bit earlier, he sets up a squad to take the detective over to the graveyard to look around. So we jump a little bit forward to a press conference later that day, and the sergeant announces happily that they've caught the escaped serial killer and that he's not just a murderer, but a cannibal. Okay, we got to make it a little bit juicy for the tabloids. He's loving the attention, but it gets cut short as a reporter asks if the suspect is the same one that was shot and killed just days prior. So the sergeant is pissed. He storms out and he confronts the tits right off of the psychologist, Dr. Decker. He is more mad than bewildered at the fact that there is an undead dude in his cell.
Yeah, he's just like it's, if you it's an inconvenience together, for him. He's just like, yeah. He's dead. Come on, guys. Couldn't tell me that.
You can let me know.
How embarrassing. How embarrassing for me.
How am I supposed to say this in front of all the cameras? Doesn't even make sense. Like, I would be panicking, me personally, but that's fine. So let's check out how the detective squad is doing back at the cemetery, okay? The cops decide to sneak attack, kick in the mausoleum door, and they end up stealing the poor dog owner demon guy, our nice puppy boy, and just drag him out because he's the first guy that they see. He's standing right at the door, and the poor Boston is in the background barking in defense of his poor owner. So Detective Joyce is like the only one noticing during this drag out beat down moment that's happening that our man in custody starts smoking in the sunlight, and the poor guy is like, just, you can hear him suffering.
Help
greatly.
Me. Like, it, I'm yeah. bawling my eyes out at this point, even more so than the cat little girl.
It was so brutal. So Detective Joyce is actually calling for the other officers to get off of him. But you know how the boys in blue sometimes do, mostly do. They continue the beating, and the poor man reaches for the detective's shoe, but when he had the moment to do anything, Detective Joyce ends up backing away in disgust of what they are seeing as a monster. And the sun ends up proving to be a little bit too much in the end. And our poor man's blistering body fucking explodes. Oh. And the poor sad dog runs for cover below. So at least the puppy's safe. But RIP to our nice dog guy, nice dog friend. He is in bits and pieces all over the cemetery.
Do you think so, that the dog would blow up too?
I hope not.
Like, do you think the dog is a night breed? Like, that's just what his form is? Or he's just a dog that, like, they found and were like, we like the dog. We're not going to eat the dog.
Well, remember Rachel and Babette have a kitten in their crypt, right? So I think that they have pets.
That's cute.
Let's just hope the dog doesn't explode. It doesn't in the movie.
Stray cats end up everywhere. So they have like a million. They're all breeding over and over again everywhere. Poor little kitties.
Yeah, they're the real night breed.
Yes.
It's true. So anyways, back up to the heinous scene happening above ground. The coppers are looking over the charred bits and pieces of their victim. The detective comes to the conclusion, you know, the sun did it. And they plan to use that to their advantage. There's no time for celebration, though, as there is a second explosion. Their cruiser goes up in fucking smoke as our peel-faced friend drives away mechanically laughing. So Eddie Munson comes in a little bit too late to save his little monster friend, but he crashes up that fucking cruiser. Fuck you guys. But, you know, they're in a bit of a panic about the fact, you know what, their car isn't here. So they call back to base and let Dennis Rader know that their car is in a bit of a situation. And he says, you know what, that's the final straw. It's time for war. So
I hate this guy. He's such a piece of shit.
He's garbage. But you know what? He realizes, you know, maybe the guns and the ammo aren't just enough. He goes and he grabs that motherfucking priest from the holding cell, tells him to grab all of his crosses and Bibles because today they're going to need God on their side. And we pan outside where it looks like the cops have collected their best Civil War reenactors to aid them on this mission. The townspeople do not look of this century. They're packing up their pickups with like old crusty boxes full of whatever old fucking rifles. You know, the ones
they're the Night of the Living Dead hillbillies.
They recycled
them.
Yes. Yeah, they're like, do you guys want to come out for one last hurrah? They're like, yeah, you know, most of us are dead, but yeah, we'll get together for this movie. Don't worry about it.
That detective better watch out.
Oh my God, right? Oh my God. Legitimately. Yeah, when you guys are done with this, watch Night of the Living Dead if you never have, and that's going to hit you real hard, almost like a bullet to the head.
Yeah.
So, you know what? The convoy takes off to Parliament. Wait, sorry, wrong story. Okay. a Midian's hooting and a hollering. They're heading off to Midian, hooting and a hollering. They're waving flags, burning diesel. You know, the whole hurrah. They got it figured out. But one car is driving the opposite way back towards town. And it's our boy, Eddie Munson, a.k.a. Peelface, a.k.a. the love of our lives.
Only face.
Okay, he's... Yeah, sorry. He's peeled scalp, not peeled face. His face is fine.
He's reverse peel face. Yes. Reverse peel face, yeah.
We're not making it confusing. I fucking swear to God. It's the only way to tell the story. I have a few more names for him
after, so it's confusing. Yeah.
You guys better pull out a piece of paper like I did while watching Dark and start writing down who's who, because that's the only way to get through it.
True.
So anyways, our reverse peel face, a.k.a. only face, a.k.a. Eddie Munson, gets Lori in the car, and he and the mother demon woman, a.k.a. Rachel, tell her that they need to get Boone back to Midian. He's the only one of them who's ever gone into Baphomet's chamber, spoken to her slash him, I don't know them, and has survived the ordeal. So they think that she's told him something that could save their people. They really need to get him back out of jail into their crew because there's a fucking monster war happening. So our freaks storm the cop house and they start bashing pigs to get to their friends. The mama demon slips through the solid steel holding hall door thing. She comes in as smoke and then flashes some titty to the guards to lure them to their death. Poison titty smoke. So all in all, Boone is freed. Lori confesses her love to him, and then they proceed to make out and fondle each other as if they have all the time in the world.
He's licking her neck like, ugh.
Oh, it's so aggro. Like, I mean, how long do you think he was in holding for? Like, didn't they just see each other yesterday afternoon, maybe? Sooner. The frauderizing is actually so intense. Yeah, it makes Boone go into his Scarface mode. And then this makes Lori hard as fuck. And yeah, they just are licking each other all up. And why not just do it?
She so wants that... to show her love for him, no matter how deformed he looks with his twirly face.
I don't care that you have some graphic liner on your cheeks. You're my man. So anyways, back to the convoy. We've got the priest reading some scripture to get everyone in the mood for some good old-fashioned Bible-powered murder. As the cops and military set up their tripwires and Home Alone bullshit, the priest discovers they've actually made a terrible mistake. This isn't hell or evil. This place is holy ground. It says so in the fucking Bible, bitch.
Bam.
So this I don't even want to say pieces next to the next word I was going to say, BTK, but this pisses BTK off. He chokes the priest out before threatening to kill him because God stuff, religion, yeah. It always brings out the best in people. So in the wheat field, we come over to Detective Joyce, who is already a little paranoid of the doctor. And then the doctor decides to kind of lure him to check something out in his car. As Joyce looks in the vehicle at the Detective Joyce heads over to the car and takes a look at this sweet fucking knife that's laid out, and our doctor bag face swings at him with his long blade and slashes him up. So
again, his heart must be in his cheek because literally, like, it doesn't even look like he wounded him. He's just like a little bit of bleeding on the side of his neck. Not even the jugular.
Just no vitals are hit whatsoever. But that's the end of our Detective Joyce for some reason. Anyways, we pan back to our gang who's gunning it up the road. They are racing back to Midian, but in the distance is a large, huge, massive explosion. We see our Nightbreeds underground running for cover as their ceiling begins to collapse in on them. On the surface, guys, it is hellfire.
So our band of misfit anti-heroes arrive at Midian and chaos is ensuing everywhere. The underground of Midian is being destroyed below and Marinara is not having it. He goes upstairs and his face can only be described as the angriest cat. He goes full beast mode and somersaults onto a truck to show these hicks how Davy Jones does it. Get it? Because he's just like a pirate and he looks like he has tentacles.
Yeah.
For a minute, when his head, like, from above, like on the roof, looks down, he's giving me some Jeppy Creppy vibes.
Jeppy Creppy.
Jeppy Creppy. So the truck manages to throw him forward and he is smoked by it. But don't you fret. No one is truly dead in Midian. And in a matter of seconds, he is up and that truck is going down, down. And legitimately, that truck is going into 1995's Mortal Kombat Johnny Cage versus Scorpion scene.
Yes.
Boone and company make it down and it is chaos down here, Tom. Everyone is running in all directions. Our Doug Bradley is yelling at everyone, telling them to stay below in their home. I feel for the guy. This is a whole lot of PTSD for him, I'm sure. Because, like, if these guys were around back in the day, like, we saw in that little memory, that was horrible. Yeah. But Boone, he has another plan.
Stay down! Stay where you are! They're waiting for us above! No! Don't listen to him or we'll all be slaughtered! This is our home! If you want to live, it won't be here. And it won't be by your laws. If we want to survive, we've got to fight back. We can't hide anymore. Take the children above ground. Find a hiding place. What about Baphomet? Can he be moved? Can he be moved?
Yes. It could be done.
It must be done. Brothers and sisters, it's time to fight.
Outstanding.
So everyone is hyped and ready to go. Suddenly, half the characters look like they're from Star Wars, all except for my friend Uncle Bad Touch.
You heard what he said.
What chance have we got? They're armed.
So am I. Come to Daddy.
He is serving Beetlejuice chic and I'm living for it. All right. There is so much shit happening all at once, my dudes. We have a shot of the drunk priests giving all of the dead daemons their last rites and blessing their scary fucking corpses, saying that they are with God now. What kind of God allows men to cause literal genocide, though?
Right.
Oh, wait. Your God.
Oh, that's shit. Right. Twist.
Now we have a shot of some loser cop and hillbillies flamethrowing a Midianian.
Midianian.
And Lori is back near the entrance. And Dr. Decker, a.k.a. Tomas from Guillermo del Toro's The Orphanage, is coming for her like a little schoolgirl. Back to Boone. He is being a total boss bitch, breaking apart caskets to make weapons and screaming at his malformed friends to defend themselves. And then, my new favorite line in this movie to date.
You can't do it for yourself. Do it for your children.
If you're not going to do it for yourself, at least do it for your children.
Sick, Boone.
What children? What are you talking about? Which one of the creepy fucking... Is it the fat guy with the belly? The belly hat? Is he a child? I don't know. Guns are a
firing. His face is his own child.
Oh my God. He gave birth halfway. It came out like partially.
More alien references here.
Oh my God. Like Total Recall. We could pull that up in here. All right. Guns are firing. And I mean a lot of guns. And suddenly I remember we're in Canada and I'm shocked. But then I remember we're in Alberta. And sadly that shock goes away. This is literally a dream to a whole lot of right-wing asshats. Shooting a bunch of marginalized folks. Not all Albertans though, I'm sure.
Jamie, is this the Calgary Stampede? Is this what it's like there? Because we should go.
100%. And you know what? I would just like to turn the bulls loose on them. That's all.
I want to arm the bulls.
Yes, let's arm the bulls. All right. Lori is running from Decker and her would-be sexual assaulter, Extreme Scullet, is there to provide backup as she continues on. Sadly, that is not too far as she falls into the ground and ends up back in home base and Midianians are dropping like flies.
No.
Under the rubble, she catches a glimpse of Babette, covered in rubble.
When is Babette not covered in rubble? Okay, name me one time.
I know. She once again saves her, and I'm sure the offer to take her home is still there. It might be a good idea right about now.
Adopt, don't shop.
They turn to make a run for it to be blocked by, you guessed it, some piece of shit Diagolon member or Proud Boy with a gun.
I'm yelling. Sorry, I just yell laughed.
It looks like he might be in need of some Tums, though, as he looks to his stomach in utter agony. And slowly, through the smoke, a hand makes its way through his diaphragm, and he is toast. Burnt toast, Dr. Pinfield. It's Hell our yeah. girl, Rachel Rochelle. Legit, if I could be any of the forsaken misfits of the dark, I'd be her. And you can be the spicy porcupine.
Yes, you know I've got those sharp titties.
All right, let's head back down, back upstairs, where the chief of police has gone full Robert Duvall in Apocalypse Now. He is just relishing in the death around him, lighting his cigarette with a Molotov or some shit.
Yeah.
A Molotov cocktail. Our priest friend is still kicking it and grabs the chief and begs him to stop. There are children down there. LOL again with the children. The chief shoves him to the ground and calls him the anti-gay F-word and points his gun at the father's skull. And boom, it's Boone. And he drops.
Can I say one thing? Can I say one thing? Can I say one thing?
Yes, please.
That the priest was called the F-word, but the only F-word he is Team Freak Baby.
Yes, honey. Snaps, snaps, snaps all around. So Boone drop kicks the cop and saves the priest, but not before telling him that they don't like priests around here, so leave. But the priest yanks off his holy collar thing and says he has to see, and he wants Boone to take him with him. And Boone grins weird. At this, and it's weird. And now we flash over to some cops. Yeah, the priest is fucking weird. We flash over to some cops literally blowing some dude's brains out and getting splattered in his brain juice when, ouchie, what was that? A mosquito bite? A bee sting? A quill? Mm. Yes, it was a quill, and it came from behind them. But all I see is a half-human, half-hedgehog with naked titties licking her lips at me. Men are so fucking dumb and predictable. And she takes out three of these pigs at once. Not all pigs, sorry. They were cops. Yeah, and she is loving it. To which I have to say, if one quill can kill a dude, why don't they have her perched in a sniper hole somewhere? Just right? Taking out middle-aged white dude at a time.
Have her on a branch with her back facing them. She doesn't even have to look and just unleash the quills.
Yeah. Back down below, Boone, who's being followed by a scared-looking ex-priest, finds Qui-Gon Jinn, who is just sitting there doing nothing, and calls him out. This is Doug Bradley, by the way.
Yes, yes.
He explains to Boone that Baphomet has already shown him what will happen and points to the haunted birdbath where Boone sees the prophecy for himself. They are all going down in flames, but Boone isn't going without a fight and convinces Gandalf the Gills to release the berserkers, who are actually berserk and will just kill everything. But hey, maybe they've had some time to better themselves downstairs, locked up in a fucking disgusting dungeon. I'm sure they're fine. They're probably really happy down there.
Yeah, they love it.
The master, who has a special berserker key, is just a second from turning it and releasing them. And they are adorable. They are like a little litter of baby rancors. He's seconds away from turning it, but then he is sniped, literally sniped, with a bullet right into his skull. And Boone is left to finish this task. And he opens up the cages for the berserkers, who charge towards him. But he does a fancy little jump upwards, and the baby rancors continue on. So just like seeing your fave hockey team come back in the third period with minutes left on the clock, the berserkers are doing what they do best, going berserk. All the hicks and cops are fleeing as their puny man-made weapons are absolutely useless on these ancient creatures of the moon. All except the chief, who is taking this all a little too personally. He is giving me Robert Downey Jr. at the end of Natural Born Killers, just living his best psycho fantasy. We now pan to Lori, who finds a wounded marinara down below, who starts jabbering on about a prophecy.
That's Boone.
Yes, it's him. All
these years waiting for a savior. He hasn't saved us. He's destroyed us. I made him. The bite was mine. The bite that mocks death.
That doesn't make him yours.
Lori's confused. Mel is confused. We're all a bit confused. The best way I can describe this prophecy is in a Star Wars storyline. So he was supposed to bite him, and he was supposed to be the chosen one, and he was supposed to save them, but he's not following the prophecy. So maybe him and Lori will have a set of twins. Lori will die.
Oh, yes.
He'll turn into Darth Vader in anger.
And the twins will kiss.
Be separated. And later on in life, they will kiss.
Okay, thank you. Thank you so much.
You get it now?
Yeah, I got it.
Meanwhile, upstairs, the carnage is insane. Bodies everywhere. Boone is wondering about looking for Lori when he bumps into a good old friend of his. That's right, this human sock puppet himself, Deckard. And he isn't alone. He's carrying a pole, brandishing the head of our beloved Eddie, a.k.a. No Face.
A.k.a. I guess, Peel Scalp. A.k.a.
A.k.a. Extreme Skullet.
Yes. Oh, rest in peace. A.k.a.
Only Face. I guess the sun didn't bother him that much, but getting his head cut off sure did the trick. Boone leaps at Decker in anger, and they both tumble down below. And remember my Mortal Kombat reference earlier? This is literally that scene. Decker and Boone are throwing each other around. And I have to say, for a regular, boring old human, Decker is lasting longer than I would have thought. Like, I knock the wind out of myself if I stub my toe.
He's powered by evil.
But alas, yes. Like all movies, this one needs to end, especially this one with the extra 20 minutes. So Boone impales himself and then pulls Decker close into a loving embrace, and they share one final dance as they fall below. And before I pass the mic over to you, Mel, I am really getting nostalgic about our boy Mitch over at Doom Asylum. Like, literally, Boone is slowly turning into Mitch. every second he gets it. closer and closer.
I love it.
Please continue.
Will do. I'm going to let Dennis in really quick. I'm going to be so fast because she's banging at the door. 1 second.
We only have 2 hours, Dennis.
You stupid whore.
So after Boone kicks his therapist's ass, despite Lori trying to get him to flee with her to safety, he goes forward to Baphomet's chamber. The place is in shambles, guys. Like, there is crashing thunder and lightning and imminent collapse. Below, all of the ghouls and goblins surround the figure of their goddess, and Boone draws near as it becomes sentient and wraps its arms around our hero. The figure drops this dope new knowledge.
You have destroyed our refuge. This was inevitable. No home is forever. You must rebuild what you destroyed. You must find me, heal me, save me from my enemies. You are no longer Boone. You are Cabal.
So Boone levels up. Boone is basically some demigod named Cabal, which, fun fact, is the name of the book that Clive Barker wrote. If you didn't listen to our last episode, I believe I mentioned it in our little IMDb intro notes. So, he must save Baphomet and her people. Cabal. LOLs. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I feel like we should be calling Baphomet they. But they refer to them as like he and she. So I guess their preferred pronouns
I call them a she, you call them a he. Yes. Which I'm so sorry.
Because they are the divine masculine and feminine.
Yeah. They're like the goth yin yang.
Yes.
That's pretty much it. Demonic half goat yin yang symbol of the satanic church. We've lost all of our religious right-winger listeners. I don't think we had any to begin with. Make sure to announce yourself in the comments, as you love to do. The airport.
I mean, comments. We've already lost all the men.
Anyways. Yeah. But we say not men. All men. Hashtag not all men. Not all men.
Literally. There are good men out there. We know that. Very few, but there are. And you know what? If you're listening, you're probably one of them. But maybe not.
Anyway, speaking of men, our boy animorphs to his next level of badass, and he and Lori begin their ascent to safety. But meanwhile, in the collapsing pit, the priest who needed to see, in his words, looks on in complete shell shock. He approaches the statue, but much like a crow. I don't know. Why am I not saying that? He's distracted by the shiny, mystical pool of bubbling liquid. Yes. You call it the haunted milk bath, the haunted bird bath. But yeah, the one that's used for the ceremonies.
Yeah.
And the idiot reaches for it. Baphomet, Carrie telekinesis throws that shit up in his face and transforms him into a Nightbreed demon.
Baphomet is offended.
Yeah, Baphomet's like, fuck no, bitch. I don't think so. So this infraction causes the ultimate chain of explosions and hellfire, the complete and utter decimation of this underground world. The final flames lick the heels of Lori and Boone, as they do for heroes, as they shamble away from the now ruined cemetery. So
cool guys don't look at explosions.
No, you just get blown away from it. God damn it, Dennis. Dennis wants to be part of the podcast.
Hi, Denny.
She's a little freak boutique. She's the real night demon. So anyways, our hero and his compadre girlfriend.
I'm like, the priest?
Yeah.
Like, isn't that what you call them?
No, just padre, not compadre.
Okay.
Your compadre is your friend, but your padre, your padre's, he blesses you. Yes. Yeah. So anyways, Boone turns to Lori.
Come, padre. He blesses you with his cum.
Oh, sorry, she, I'm a no, child. She says come, padre. Because he's blessed her three times in this movie. So anyways, you know what? Not all stories can have happy endings. Boone turns to Lori and he says, like, you know what? I'm needed. My work must begin tonight. And she says, okay, yeah, no problem. And he gently caresses her face to be like, no, girl, like, you're not coming with me. I belong to the Nightbreed now. So she declares, like, fuck that. I want to be with you. And he says, no probs, babe. I'll come back for you.
What a fuck boy. Yeah. What a fuck boy.
She's like, okay, hi, I know what's happening. You're immortal, so what? You're going to come back for me when I'm 93? I went through hell for you, boy. So, like, every girlfriend, as he's walking away, she stabs herself in the stomach with a knife that she had snagged earlier. This is done to make sure that she has his attention and knows that technically he's the one who stabbed her in the stomach. You know, like, baby, if you didn't want to abandon me, we wouldn't be here right now.
Dude, she seppuku'd herself.
She did. She did. She really did. So as she lays dying in the grass, she tells him she's so sorry. With no other choice, Boone snacks on her neck a little bit, marinara style, in hopes that she wakes up again. But for about 10 seconds, it's too late. And he screams, no, before she opens her eyes. So, yeah.
Just like Darth Vader. Oh, my God. It's all Star Wars related, I swear. Also, are they vampire?
Maybe he's vampire.
Yes.
So they start making out. Who's surprised? And then we pan over to actual surprise. Sergeant Slaughter is still alive, bitches. And he looks like fucking garbage. His mustache is burnt off his face. But he's not backing down yet. He approaches the ruin of the cemetery and he finds his old friend Priest lighting candles at a vigil.
Like, that's his name. I love that. His old buddy Priest.
Old buddy Priest is lighting candles at a vigil of Boone. Weird crush happening right now.
No, I don't think it's a vigil of Boone.
What is it?
I think it's Decker's dead body.
Oh my God, why did I think it was Boone? Shut the fuck
up. Dude, he's wearing glasses and everything. He's got like the suit on.
Oh, I must have been watching this movie with no eyes.
No eyes.
Okay, no, so he's that's even better.
That makes more sense, right?
Yes, it does. It does now. I'm going to have to rewatch the last 40 minutes of this.
Girl, I have to rewatch the last 40 minutes like five more times because like all of this extra 20 minutes all happened at the end because I swear the original cut, like the cut that Clive Barker didn't like, just like ended everything getting crushed.
I'm going to hook you up with some knowledge, but we're going to jump back into the movie real quick because we have about 53 minutes before we get kicked out of Riverside.
Wow.
So
stay out of Riverside.
I saw their gun. I saw it. I can still smell him. He's out there. Oh, yes. God burned me. I'm burning back. All of them. Burn them all away.
So the priest states that the two lovers escaped and that they burned him, and he wants to burn them back. And the sergeant asks him to take him with him. But the priest, baby, he's got other plans. He chokes the cop out and leaves him in a pile of rubble. The priest then backs into the shadows like evil people do in movies. So we know what happened there. You know, he got splashed in the face with some bird shit and he's evil.
Oh, and guys, like, he does not look burnt. He has the smoothest head I've ever seen. He just has he just looks like Megamind.
Yes,
now.
He does.
That's it. That's it, literally. And the cop, he actually throws him on top of his beautiful fucking altar he made for Decker.
Oh, that's
all
so
hail
cute.
Decker. All that's hail. Like, now he's worshiping the fucking sock puppet now.
Yes. Is he doctor or God? Anyways, in a little barn off in the distance, the remaining brood of survivors await. We didn't lose everybody in the basement Baphomet explosion, okay? Everybody, well, not everybody, but a lot of them, they're okay. The young child Babette asks her mother who will come for them, and old forehead demon responds, their leader, Cabal, will. And the mother says, hell yeah, girl, if not on this wind, then the next. And then we pan to our couple, standing heroically by the ashes of the graveyard before fading into some sweet prophecy wall drawings that depicted Boone with his lady at his side. The same cave drawings we saw at the beginning. That's the final tapestry piece, baby. And the movie's done.
Oh, and I mean, obviously, Doug Bradley probably just knew this all along, or and, he's yeah. just dumb.
That's why he kept trying to be like, yeah, go to Baphomet's chamber. Definitely go talk to the statue. Like, it's good. Yeah, you should do it.
Then he was like, everybody stay down here just and die. I was going to say, where are the berserkers? They're not dead. Where did they go?
No. They'll be fine.
They're gone. Where are they?
They're
cryptids now. Now they are cryptids. They're out in the Appalachian Mountains.
They ripped some cop dick off earlier and they're just like, you know,
they're driving around in his cruiser with his hat on and shit.
We got to stay out of the light. So just to answer some of your questions about us watching the director's cut versus the original that you were familiar with, and I've never seen this before, so this was my first jump at it. The last scene of the film does not exist in the director's cut version. Sorry, which does not exist in the director's cut version of the film. So the one that you saw originally. I love it when I talk and I make things more confusing. So the last scene of the original does not exist in the director's cut version of the film. The priest revives Decker by sticking his hand into his stomach, which is a tribute to Cronenberg's film Videodrome. In the film's original cut, Narcisse is also killed and decapitated by Dr. Decker during the final battle. Test audiences were very displeased with this. They considered Narcisse to be one of the best characters. I'm pretty sure that is Spike Tits, possibly. Porcupine Woman.
I don't remember her getting decapitated.
So this was in the original, but the audiences hated it so much that the producers changed the character's fate for the theatrical release. And this death scene was later reinstated for the 2014 director's cut. So there's a lot of versions of this movie, which is cuckoo bananas because they change it a bit in every single one.
This movie, it was clearly in like the original cut, like the director's cut. Clearly this is meant to have like a part two or needs to be like a 4-hour long movie because they really shoved in a lot of shit at the end that I'm like, but now what? But now what?
They ended it with clearly Dr. Decker is dead, but the priest now has a revenge arc because he got the water splash in his face and now he's an evil Nightbreed and he wants to pick up where the priest left off and he wants to kill Boone and all of the Nightbreeds for revenge. So yeah, like you said, like this movie does feel like it was gearing up to a part two, but I think that there were so many issues maybe even getting the first one like green lighted and even like, you know, that the studios completely ripped it apart, that I think that probably a part two was never even gonna come to fruition. Probably maybe in a book.
We'll have that, to look. And again, like, he probably, like, I mean, I'm sure he was hoping this could be like a Hellraiser franchise.
Yes.
You know, but again, yeah.
I feel like Clive Barker was really hoping. Can we both stop?
Sorry. Yeah, definitely. I mean, if he wrote a book about it, like, did he write a book called Hellraiser too?
I'm not sure. I know that he's got like plenty of novels. I don't know how he has the time to direct. I need to
read all these books now. Yeah. Like, why haven't I been reading Clive Barker?
I know. We need to get on that. But let me jump in with some fun facts as we start wrapping things up. So David Cronenberg, who we know played Dr. Decker, just cuckoo bananas man, he was writing the script for Naked Lunch in his spare time when he wasn't acting in this. Another person who has many jacks of all of the trades. Also, the knife that Decker uses to kill his victims is called a Liston knife. It is a surgical blade used for amputation, which also became associated with Jack the Ripper due to its appearance in From Hell. I don't know if you remember that movie with Johnny Depp.
I love that movie.
And yes, that was fun. Bilbo Baggins is in it. So Rachel's rescue of Boone by nude seduction of the prison guard is an homage to Toby Hooper. We know Toby Hooper because he created the Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise. It's similarly a maligned and spectacular life force. Sorry, I'm reading these from IMDb. And it was also the victim of near fatal studio interference 5 years prior, just like this movie was. So they kind of are kindred in that way. And Clive Barker, guess what, honey? He has a cameo, but is unrecognizable in a cat-like monster mask. I wonder if he plays Babette. One last note. In a tie-in documentary, Clive Barker relates that the producers expressed a concern for this movie. You know what they said? They said, but the monsters are the good guys. And Barker replied, that's the point.
Yes.
And we love it. We love it.
We love our marginalized fucking Nightbreed, honestly. And like, I've always went with the misfits.
Always.
I don't want to be the cool popular kid in the movie. I want to be the one who's like fucking picked on and then finds treasure down in on a pirate ship.
Exactly. I want my face to be stitched to my stomach as a flying overhead shark monster rips apart my enemies. Like, that's what I want.
Yeah. You know, what I want also is to pick another movie. Like, I'm really excited to watch another movie, especially because you picked the categories. But we won't be doing that today. Mel, what are we going to be doing?
So when you guys have an opportunity and you want to know what we'll be covering next, we are going to be playing another version of a Marry, Fuck, Kill and Wild Card, bitches. And that'll be a little vodcast for you guys to watch. So that'll be, you know, you smash that next button, it's going to happen. But
can we give them the category?
Oh, yes. Least? So we have created a small event for spring called Spring Onto the Slab, where we will be choosing from the category of only slabs, mortuaries, things that happen on the autopsy table. So we have a couple of choices, each of us, and we will be going through all of spring on the slab with you. And I hope that that excites you, because it is a weird niche, but there's a ton of movies that you don't realize either really revolve around the autopsy table, or it has a prominent feature or a nice spook, a nice scare that happens within
the chambers. And honestly, like, the last time we played Marry, Fuck, Kill, like, we only picked like one. Like, we're actually each doing our own, like, picking our own Marry, Fuck, Kills.
Yes.
And I'm super stoked. Like, the ones I chose, like, honestly, I'm like, can Kill just go away though? No, I'm just joking. I'm like, imagine we pick Kill, and then we're like, fuck, we just have to watch these stupid movies we hate.
Yeah.
But
it, yeah.
Either way, you know what? It's the name of the game.
It's the name of the game. We don't get to choose the straws.
Other people
or the cards
love it. Yes. Other people love my kill, which I don't understand, which I'm not going to get into.
No, but we'll get into it when we actually start choosing. We'll give you guys a little bit of a brief of maybe why we love or why we hate or why we've categorized them the way that they do. And if we want to do four, we can maybe do two draws each. And the way that we pick them will dictate the order in which they get released. So whether we choose mm-hmm. two, whether we choose four, you'll have to watch the vodcast to figure out how that goes.
And we'll actually be together this time. So, you know.
That's perfect because we only have 42 minutes left in Riverside. So we fucking did it.
We killed it.
Mel, what would you rate this? Nailed it. Oh, yeah. I never rated this. So I would maybe give this, because the ending was a bit confusing and went nowhere, mm-hmm. I would give this probably a solid 7.
That's what I did. Why yeah. are we always thinking, stop getting into my brain?
I was going to give it originally a 6.5, but I
just heard that in my head. Yeah. I swear to God, I'm just being psychic now.
It's that fucking moon rock that you have. Mm-hmm. The space rock is reading my brain. It's telekinesis.
And it's also hovering over me. Oh, my God. No, joking.
Yeah. Oh, God. If it was floating, that'd be it. That would be the next story I covered by myself, because you'd be dead and it would just be a true crime whodunit. Did the Rock Kill Jamie podcast? I'd rename it and everything.
Well, guys, also too, here's the thing. Like we mentioned earlier, please feel free to check out our Instagram, where we'll have a link tree to our Buy Us a Coffee that we created. We might, you know, do a Patreon in the future, but for now, like, you know, we're just starting off small. We don't expect too much, but if you could spare a little bit, you know, skip a coffee for the day, maybe get a Red Bull. No, Red Bull's more expensive. Maybe just sleep and could help us out. That'd be great. You could find that at boo.crime.podcast
no dots.
On Instagram.
No dots.
Okay. At boo crime podcast.
Yes. But also, I'm going to link our Buy a Coffee link in the description, in the show notes.
You could also email us as well. Because I was going to say, don't just buy us a coffee. Like I said, if you can help us out by sharing with your friends, reviewing, you know, liking our stuff online, any of that, that would be great. And also, if you guys have any fun ideas for games that we could play, or any suggestions of movies that you want to see, mm-hmm. like, eventually the goal would be not us, you know, picking everything. In the future, we would love to get you guys to be playing the games, and maybe we would have some online polls or on Spotify, some polls to figure out which movies you guys like. So the more you interact with us, the more we know. I mean, we know you're out there, but we want to hear from you.
We're not a rude wedding singer. We accept requests. So you guys always feel free to get in touch. And like Jamie said, you can email, you can hit us up on Instagram. Our socials will be in the show notes. If not, Boo Crime Podcast on Instagram and pretty much everywhere else. BooCrimePodcast@gmail.com. That's the way to do it.
Exactly. So well, feel free what are we going to do with our spare?
What are we going to do with our spare 39 minutes? I drank green tea and spoke so fast.
Yeah, I had some sacred cacao and a tequila smash. And a tequila smash.
Nothing like chocolate and tequila to really get you going on a Wednesday night.
The cacao is to raise me, and the tequila is to raise me and get me drunk.
To raise me up? Like Josh Groban?
Raise me up. I'm a mountain.
Don't sue us, Josh Groban. Sorry. We have no money.
Yeah, that was in 10 seconds. Anyways, let's sign out, Mel, and maybe they'll save this 45 minutes for us for the next time.
Does it roll over to the next month? I'd be so happy, Riverside. Hope so. Please, God, help us.
We want those rollover minutes, bitch. Remember how cool rollover minutes were back in the day?
Oh, life-changing.
Life-changing. Okay, well, anyways, it's been a time. This movie was fun, but I'm happy to be moving on from it, and I'm excited to do what we're going to do next. So we will see you guys on Friday, possibly Saturday, when we actually upload it with our video drawing of our next film.
Ooh.
Well, until then, Mel?
Boo-bye.
Boobies.